Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
Voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine abyss, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Welcome once again to the wonders and joy of another fun, fantastic episode of After Rod. You should come here every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever the hell you are on, whatever you, etc. Tonight's guest is Vince Churchill, an author of some amazing little stuff, and he is going to talk right now. How's it going, Vince?
How are you?
I am always amazing. Can you not tell by my amazing entrance?
Well, you know, it smells like happiness.
It actually smells like cookies and Coca-Cola. A whole butt ton of it. That now I'm at the point where I have to scale that crap back.
Well, you wouldn't be the only one on that, man.
Oh, I know. I've heard the things and all that stuff, and now I have to moderate.
Yeah. So they say.
Yes, I've heard. Most of them I'm planning on ignoring, but some of them, okay, I'm doing that one. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about fun stuff. You are an author of some, I've seen 8 novels and a couple of other short stories.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit.
It's been a fun ride. We'll kind of discount the last couple of years because not a whole lot got done. But you know, prior to that, yeah, we've gotten a few things done and a few things published and met a lot of nice people along the way.
Well, I saw one of your early books was from Muted Press. We must have met on the chat boards back then, back in the day when things were cool.
Now that very well could be true.
Ooh, somebody's noticed the something that I do with my recording and broadcasting is the audio is broadcast in 2 streams, left channel, right channel. I'm on one channel, you're on another channel, which allows me to play with it when I edit afterwards.
good luck with that.
Oh, no, that's easy. I just use a leveler. It's like, okay, level me up or level you down or level one other and just keep going with whatever needs to go around.
Sweet.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Evie. They're in the chat room. By the way, if you're interested, there is a live chat room where they can ask questions and stuff sitting right over there.
Oh.
You don't need to go over there. I'm just saying for anybody listening.
I was going to say, no new friends for Vince.
Well, you can have new friends. You never know. I'm sure Jack is probably... Yeah, I think Jack's on your Facebook as well.
All right, I'll try to be good.
Nah, it's okay. We don't have to be good here. Hey, Mark. Hi, Mark. Mark's in the chat room, too. I didn't say that because he was in the chat room before I got here. So if anybody's interested, it's tmvcafe.com/radio. And there is a chat room. You can say ask questions. And sometimes I'll ask, and sometimes I'll answer. Sometimes we'll throw them at my guest, who tonight is Vince Churchill. You know what's really good about your name?
If it has something to do with Winston, we can skip it.
No, that's not the good part. The good part is it's easy to pronounce.
Yes.
I know how to pronounce that name. That's good.
My parents hooked me up with a good author name.
Excellent. And yes, Winston did pop up when I did some Google searches. And I said, nope, I know that's not him.
No, there are a lot of Amazon books by Mr. Churchill.
Just a few. And some of them are even famous. Some of them, not so much. A couple of quotes I'm familiar with. But again, not a purpose of tonight's conversation. Tonight's conversation is, apparently you have a new collection coming out called Death and Other Consequences. What's that about?
Well,
I like the cover, by the way.
It's, I'm sorry?
I love the cover, by the way.
You know what? It's got a cool look. It's going to be an oversized book, more of like a giant coffee table kind of book, but much bigger than a regular trade paperback. And that's part of that is because of some of the contents. But yeah, it's I'm not a big short story guy. I think I kind of followed in the footsteps of a lot of authors early in their careers, where, you know, you kind of take the path of least resistance, and you churn out some short stories and you get them out there and try to get in anthologies, and just, you know, you're trying to get published and get a little momentum, a little confidence. And I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to land a couple of those. And I think you mentioned Bermuda Press earlier. I think they did some zombie stuff early on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never really very comfortable doing short stories, but I kept them around. And I always felt like whatever, you know, anthology I was in, I was just fortunate enough to get in. I always thought, gosh, well, hopefully the good thing will be if my story is the least of the best, then it must be pretty good. But I never really felt like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to have the best story in here. It was kind of like, ooh, I got in. Sweet. So
I understand that one.
Yeah, it just, you know, I was lucky to get in some, and it seemed like, and I don't know if a lot of newer authors have this feeling, you know, you want to just get that first one under your belt, and then it seemed like it got easier, you know, to get in other anthologies. I had a little nest of those, but I hadn't really been writing short stories a lot in the last, gosh, even I want to say practically last decade. But to do a couple of novellas, and I had something published, and everything was just kind of lingering, and I was just feeling like, hey, you know, some of this stuff is pretty good, but I'm not sure that a lot of people saw a lot of this early stuff of mine, that they really know me more as a book guy. And so I decided, hey, you know, I had some time on my hands, and was kind of in between things, and said, well, let me see if I've got enough, if I put some of these together. And I think probably 75-80% of the book is previously published stuff, and then there's, I think, three or four pieces that are that never got published, never got a chance to get them out, and then something brand new that I've been literally waiting the last couple of years to try to find a way to, you know, a direction on how to get it out in front of everybody. But we finally decided to put it with the collection, and hopefully people like it. It's, you know, it's all horror stuff for the most part, because I'm a horror guy.
Excellent.
But there's a couple goodies in there that are a little bit more on the erotic side, and then, like I said, there's the anchor of the book is a novella that's a little atypical for novellas. So I'm just debating if I should just say or no, but it is not your typical novella. It's something we tried to originally do back in 2018, and it just took a lot of time to get done, and like I said, finally figure out the format and a home to, you know, to get it out for people to see. So hopefully it will be hopefully the crown jewel of the collection. People will really like it, or if they don't particularly like this, then it's going to be, oh boy, we may have to start throwing in some candy bars or some golden tickets or something, you know?
No, that's been done.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I do like the idea. They'll either love it or they'll hate it, which is great, because then you can have no middle ground, and the middle ground is always that fuzzy stuff.
That middle ground, that, yeah, you know, every once in a while I'll be at a convention and someone will say, oh, I read so-and-so and I really liked it, and then I read X and yeah, it was just okay, which I think is their polite way of saying, I really didn't like it, but since I'm standing here in front of you, this is what I'm going to give you, and I appreciate them being polite.
Polite's always good.
That middle ground just always kind of tells me that, hey, I'm not, you know, I'm not getting the job done as finite as I would like it to be. And I don't expect everybody to like everything I write, but I don't tend to get a lot of those kind of middle ground things. Most people really like it, or for whatever reason, there's something about it that they just, you know, that just didn't trip their trigger, and that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I say all the time. Not everything is for everyone. That's yes, if everything definitely. Was, we'd be boring as crap.
There you go.
Yeah. Which is why I love the idea of love or hate, no middle, which is how I approach most shows. I mean, for the most part, if I'm going to speak about it, it's going to be I love it or I hate it. The stuff in the middle, I say, yeah, it's on the list. Here's a quantity. Here's the thing. Here's the general, blah, 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 blah. But if I love it, I'll talk about it a lot. If I hate it, I'll also talk about it a lot.
Yeah, I can definitely do without the kind of the gray area.
You know? Yeah. But the gray area exists. Not just for aliens, by the way.
But I'm sorry?
Not just for aliens, by the way. Yes, I literally strew about a whole bunch of wild references that may mean absolutely nothing to anyone, but makes me giggle.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's all right. That's all right.
Excellent. So one question that did come up in the chat room is, how did you get into horror? What moved that, pulled that trigger or pushed you in that direction or gave you the groove on?
It's easy. I've been given this answer so long. I try to think of ways to make it seem better, different, jazzy or something. But it's definitely all due to my mom, who wouldn't take credit for it. But I was raised in the Midwest. We had a drive-in. And she was a big, back in the day, she was a big, like, Bette Davis, Joan Crawford fan.
Nice.
So I grew up watching a lot of those black and white thrillers. And she loved going to the drive-in. She loved horror movies. So, you know, back in the day, I think my crowning glory was going to see The Exorcist with my mom opening weekend and going through a picket line in order to go into the theater. And it was just glorious. I'm not sure if she actually knew how strong The Exorcist was at the time. I think I was 12, maybe I was 13 when The Exorcist came out.
Sounds about the right time period.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, it never really stopped her. I mean, we went to see at the drive-in, you know, Chainsaw and Last House on the Left, and you know, whenever things got ugly, she would make me put a blanket over my head. But that drive-in experience also combined with her raising me in the local public library. So I was reading at, you know, at an early age and reading at a much higher level than my grade age. And so when you put those together, it was weird, because when I started writing and trying to get published, she kept saying, you know, well, where'd you get this from? And it's like, oh, duh. And she just, I don't think she really thought those influences was really going to lead me there. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely the drive-in and mixed with the library. But we just saw so many horror movies back in the day that it was just awesome.
And The Exorcist came out in 1973. So whatever you were then, that's
what
you
were. Oh, you know what? Yeah, because I was thinking 74, so I was 11. Ah. And, dude, it was rough, because I don't think my mom really realized, you know, because that was kind of before, I mean, long before, like, online, and you couldn't, like, get reviews and things. She just knew it was some kind of devil possession movie. But I don't think she realized, I mean, I'm not sure how old Reagan was in the movie, but the idea that there was a kid somewhat my age getting, like, terrorized in the movie, it was crazy. I had nightmares for I don't know how long.
The character was supposed to be 12 years old.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think my mom realized that she was, you know, going to, like, put me into therapy. It was just awesome.
Good therapy. Yes. The productivity. I'm going to tell you, when I first saw The Exorcist, I was giggling for about half the movie. I've always had that reaction to most horror movies. It's weird. My parents looked at me funny. He's like, what? I said, it's funny. We won't go.
I can remember sitting in the theater and just, you know, at first I think I was just like, I couldn't believe it, what I was seeing. And then when things really, you know, got ugly, you know, I was just like, in the corner of my seat, like, just trying to burrow in the seat. It was just, I just, like I said, I just couldn't believe that there was this kid and something so bad was happening. And, you know, but I don't remember missing any of it. I mean, when I saw it later on, it was kind of the same movie, which, you know, in a, and that's the thing. We didn't see that at the drive-in. We saw that at a regular theater, so no blanket was available to put over my head like there was for, like, you know, Last House on the Left, which when I saw it again several years later was like a completely different movie to me. You know, I thought, you know, chainsaws in the movies were at, in the movie was actually like a lawnmower. And I mean, there was just, you know, it was just different.
Nope, I can relate.
So yeah, the horror thing, that was easy. Easy.
So
cheesy.
You blame your mom and The Exorcist.
Yes.
Excellent. Yep, good combination.
That's where it began.
And then it led you down that path and you went into, oh, look at all my pretties, I can kill them all or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we saw I think the very first movie I can remember us seeing was Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Dude, that's my first horror movie.
Yeah, and it was just, and I want to say, if it wasn't on a double bill with this other movie, then we went pretty closely another couple weeks later. It's that dinosaur western, is it the Valley of Gwangi?
Oh, the Valley of the Gwangi. Yeah, I remember that movie. Stop motion, Harryhausen stuff.
They were together, but I always have them in my mind that those were the first two drive-in movies I ever saw. So, and I blend a lot of genres with my stuff. So I know, you know, those are the kind of things that, you know, a dinosaur western is just like unheard of. Well,
less now.
Really, not so much now, but back then. But yeah, that, you know, zombies were not a big deal back in Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, which is, I always say, is one of the great titles for a drive-in kind of exploitative movie ever.
Did you know that movie was banned for a little while? Because there was a strong belief that they actually sacrificed a child in the one scene in the movie. They didn't. They proved it later. But there was a strong activity that said, no, this movie bad. They killed somebody, really. Okay, come on.
Nice.
This is not snuff movies. We don't do this. Because I remember reading something that it was filmed out by Toronto Island, which is in this area, in Toronto, in Ontario here. But I think parts of it were either done there or some of the post-production was done there, or one of the guys involved heavily of it was from here. Something like that. But this is one of the reasons why I've always gravitated to the movie. It's like, this is messed up. And it's local-ish.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it just, and I've seen it. I don't think I actually have it in my DVD collection, but it's one of those movies that when, you know, I see the title, I speak of it, you know, it takes me right back to my mom and you know, those several years of going to the drive-in. And it just seems like we just didn't see a lot of kid movies, that back then it was really more about, you know, horror movies and, you know, kind of sexy bikini kind of movies or whatever. And we rarely went to see those. She just, if there was a horror movie playing, we went to go see it.
Excellent. And that 70s was pretty much, for me anyways, was the beginning of a lot of the horror movie tropes and stuff, leading into the 80s slashers and everything else like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I say that the 70s is like literally the silver decade. It's really where... it just seems like everything, I don't want to say everything got started, because obviously the 30s, there was a lot of great classic movies back then.
Oh, yeah.
But I just feel like the 70s had a bigger influence on that generation of filmmakers and of writers, more than what happened after the 30s or the 40s or even the 50s. There's just so many great movies, and things really got... Things just got ugly in the 70s. And it not, I mean, there were some great movies like Jaws, but again, the stuff like, Last House on the Left is just not, it's just hard to imagine you're just sitting around in whatever, the early 70s, and someone comes up with an idea like that, and you're just like, oh, yeah, let's make that.
Yeah, they were willing to play with stuff a little bit that I would call uncharacteristically, without, I mean, a lot of the Hollywood big budget movies were always and always have been and always will be kind of cookie cutter types things. Here's an idea, keep with it. But the experimentation really started back then, slowed down, and I think in the last 5, 10 years, 15 years has become very explosive. So much different things that you can play with.
Yes. Well, and I think there was a time when, you know, I used to say, oh, you know, American movies, best movies on earth, American horror movies, best, you know, best movies. And then we kind of went into a lull. And then I was grudgingly having to admit, well, I don't know. Now I'm thinking, you know, is it more, you know, Japanese horror movies have gotten great. And then suddenly the French and the UK got involved. The French got, things got ugly. And then there was just like this mixture for a while of, you know, I could, you know, rattle off a whole bunch of movies where all of a sudden it was like, well, where are the great American horror movies? It's like, where are they? Because now all I'm looking at is, you know, Audition, from Audition on up to, you know, gosh, all the way up to like High Tension, but everything in between. But yeah, I just remember for there was a while there where the French were just killing it. And, you know, I just, but I love how different cultures handle, you know, they tell different stories. And I shouldn't say they tell different stories, but they have a different way of telling their horror story so that you can't just watch and just assume, you know, they don't follow the same rhythm that American horror movies tend to. They don't follow the same rules. I remember when I watched Audition for the first time, I just didn't even know what to do. I was just freaking out. It was just crazy because half the time my mind was just thinking, no, not this cannot be. What is she doing? What, you know, is that piano wire? You know,
the piano wire.
Dude. It's just,
apparently,
it's just ugly business.
Apparently we've started a drinking game. Chatroom says every time I say dude, they have to take a shot.
Sweet.
I don't normally say dude a lot, but I'm going to try and say dude a lot in this episode just for this purpose.
Well,
I hope to God she's drinking,
too. I'll do my best to help drive you that way.
Yeah. But I agree with you 100% on the differences between movie focuses, TV shows, and even the graphic stuff, comics and anime and manga and whatever. The horror style is, like, my thing is zombies. I'm a big zombie guy. And every culture in the world has some kind of variation on a zombie. But they're not all the same. And they're not all pronounced the same. They don't act the same. I mean, the only common thing is they're kind of dead. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less.
Yeah, and
happy birthday, Evie.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. You just tweak the rules a little bit. Because I can remember when the idea of a quote-unquote fast-moving zombie was like a big, like, you know, there was like huge discussions, you know, pro versus con. But the bottom line is if you watch, you know, 28 Days Later or even, you know, 28 Weeks Later, the beginning of that of the sequel, I wasn't big into, like, you know, the whole fast-moving things. I kind of like the suspense. You know, I grew up with the whole night. And then Dawn of the Dead was one of my favorite movies. So there was just something about just the slow moving kind of thing. But I think one of my great favorite scenes from 28 Weeks Later at the beginning when the Carlisle, Robert Carlisle character is running, trying to get to the boat. And they are just like, they almost look like ants. They are just, everybody's like running full out. And you're just like, holy shit.
You know,
there's a bad word.
That's okay.
Sorry about that. You just can't believe. It's just like, oh my gosh, is this really happening? And they are coming. And forget about that whole thing where, you know, I don't have to be faster than the lion. I just have to be faster than you. There is no you. So it's like, dude, you got to pick it up and put it down.
You just got to
do your best Jesse Owens imitation. And get it done. I mean, I put that on just to watch those few minutes of him running and them just like pouring out around him, trying to get to him before he got to that little pier in the boat. And I just loved that. After that, I was like, I'm perfectly cool with fast moving.
So that scene, and then one other scene in the movie are the two things I loved about that movie. Was when they're napalming the entire city of London to try and clean everything out. It's just, whoa. That was just a cool moment.
Yes. Yep.
The beginning of 28 Days Late, 28 Days was like the whole thing where the guy wakes up out of the coma, and they have that very distinctive usage of the music where there's nothing at the beginning, and it slowly builds, and you barely hear it. And then the car alarm goes off, and then it goes right into the song. It's like, that was actually cool as heck.
Yes. Yeah, I remember seeing that movie, and it was one of those things where, you know, you're picking up reviews, and you're hearing about this movie, and you've got to see it. And a lot of times, you know, especially with horror films, when things get kind of trumped up, and a lot of times it does turn out to be, but I think there's so many horror-loving folks that when they see something that's even just kind of pretty good, you just want people to see it because you have to kind of wade through a lot of to get to something kind of special. And not that, you know, I mean, just getting a movie made, you know, God bless you, is practically a miracle. But yep. But there is a big, you know, there's a big wide yarn of between the, you know, great movies and the pretty good movies, and then the movies that, you know, they got made, but they're just not very good. And that happens a lot in horror. You know, you know, people, you know, the heart's in the right place, but the execution just lacks some. But I just remember, you know, 28 Days Later, it was like you heard all this stuff and you just kept hoping that it would be almost as good as people were talking about and what people had heard at film festivals and whatever. And it was, you know, one of those rare movies when I finally got to see it that, you know, it met and exceeded all expectations.
I find myself in a unique and particular situation where I look for those kind of movies and I find a whole crap ton of them. And I love that because, like I said, zombies for me has been... it's been a solid staple of horror for the last 50 years. And every year seems to be a new interpretation that comes out that's just fantastic. I mean, you still have the whole pant load of... okay, saw a movie a couple weeks ago called Virus Shark. Sharks infected with the coronavirus become zombies. Total nice. Budget of this movie, according to IMDb, was $182. Exactly. I have these figures in my head now, burned in my head. He's like, I watch this movie. This movie was not good, but they had fun. And you could see that.
Yes.
And I love those kinds of movies, even though they're like cheesy as heck.
Yes.
There's so many of them. There's so many.
That's what like the Sci-Fi Channel is built on. It's not built on great sci-fi movies. I mean...
It's really built on
low budget, you know, your heart is in the right place, let's have some fun. Because you know, if you could go back in time, it's like, do you want to be at that pitch meeting when they pitch Sharknado, right? Did anybody even think that people were going to pay off like their mortgages, you know, with a series of Sharknado movies? I mean, there are gems, and they're all just, it's not just like, well, if it's not Blair Witch, then that doesn't count. There's lots of those lower budgeted movies, and sometimes the lack of money, it really forces the imagination really to take, you know, take a step forward, and people just, some, you know, and a lot of things have to go into really, you know, getting lucky enough to let the world see your movie, but... there are a lot of horror gems out there that, you know, you don't have to have millions and millions and millions. You can just, they can just be on the lower budgeted side, and they just hit the right notes and a little extra, you know, a little extra love and care. And next thing you know, you have something special.
I'm going to throw two things at you. One, fun fact for Sharknado. Did you know that the person they originally approached to play that role was Steve Guttenberg, the guy from Police Academy?
Oh, God, I was just thinking. And
he turned it down.
I don't even know what he looks like anymore.
He turned it down.
Something I've seen in him like lately in the last few years. Wow.
When the second movie came out and it was like, oh yeah, they approached him again to do another movie, another type of movie like Sharknado called Lavantula, Lava Tarantulas.
Nice.
And he said, yeah, sign me up. I'll do it right now. Okay. And he's in that. So if you want to see what he looks like right now, he's actually pretty, he's very fit right now.
I mean, considering, so he aged pretty well.
Yeah. Okay, I was actually rather surprised. Because
sometimes with sci-fi movies, sometimes, a good example would be, and I'm not hating because I actually love his body of work, but I know there was a time in there he got a little derailed. Like Mr. Furlong, you know, when he was a kid and then mm-hmm. kind of went away for a little while and then he came back, and I'm trying to think of the horror movie he was in, and he just, it was still him, and but he was just, I say older considering he started pretty young. But, you know, not, he's working himself back into, you know, kind of like Bobby Brown.
Edward Furlong?
Yes.
Terminator?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember anything else that he was in.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, he was in, what, was he in the, which Pets, was it the second Pet Sematary movie?
I haven't seen. Most of these movies I haven't seen. Oh, Night of the Demons I've seen.
Okay, that. You know what? And that's a remake, I believe, and that's the one I'm thinking of, that I had not seen him for a long time, saw him in that, and you could recognize him. I mean, you see his face, you're like, oh, yeah, that I know him. But, yeah, he was there for a while, and then he went away, and so now I'm not so sure.
Yes, he was in Pet Sematary, too.
That's been a while.
And a bunch of other movies, like I said, I'd never heard of and probably would never watch.
Yeah, there you have it. But, you know, hey, you know, the man is, paying his bills, and God bless him.
Absolutely. You do what you got to do. I had a director on a couple weeks ago. He's currently crowdfunding for his movie, The Frenzy Moon. It's a werewolf movie, and his whole application, his whole emphasis on it is to do only practical effects. With the only CG being like a little bit, okay, there's a little bit of flame, a little bit of coloring, a little bit of the eyes is a sprinkle or whatever, but everything else, practical effects. It was cool.
Very old
I like the idea. Very old school. And he's done a bunch of movies. If you ever get the opportunity to see a movie called Killer Rack, it's hilarious.
I have not. Okay.
Young woman decides to get breast augmentation. Turns out they are the seeds of Cthulhu. Exactly.
Well, you know what? If I've seen Teeth, then I might as well go there, right? Why not?
Absolutely. And you know, Teeth is not the only movie to involve that particular emphasis in a movie. I saw one from Japan that was fantastic in Leak. What the hell?
Yep, dude. That's nervous time, folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was like, there is some messed up stuff that comes out of Japan, man. That's all I'm going to say. There's a movie that I probably will never watch because it crosses a line. It is a zombie movie, but I'm really not so much a fan of poop. It's called Zombie Ass.
Oh, I've not heard of that, and I think I can pass on that.
It's about shit zombies.
Right. Nice.
So they bend over. It shoots out, it hits you, and you become infected, and you do the likewise. I was like, nope, I don't need that. But we'll move on to number two.
I was going to say, because I'm thinking, so are we heading towards human centipede shit zombies, or no, maybe not. Okay.
Not so much, but we're going to go to number two, and I don't mean number poo. For interesting zombie movies that were done at not so much a budget, Maggie. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, yes, I have, and I love that
movie. That movie. I hate tearjerkers.
Yeah.
But I love that movie.
Yeah, it wasn't vaguely like I thought it was going to be. It was nice to see Arnold, like, act.
Seriously.
But, yeah, the movie was, yeah, it's it's just a nice movie, but it was much better than, because I think I kind of put off watching it for a while because I was thinking, well, you know, it can't really be this kind of, you know, Dawson's Creek kind of, you know, and I'm like, no, it can't be, not with Arnold, that can't be, but it is, it's much more dramatic and quiet.
It's very somber.
I mean, there is a resonance to it that, you know, if you buy into it, it does kind of take it to another level.
Oh yeah. I mean, that whole storyline right up to the end, it's like, wait, does he or does he not? Does she or does she not? Oh crap! Which way did that go? Oh crap!
Yep.
I imagine they had two different endings there, and they just went with the one that made more tierness.
Yeah, it's look at, no spoilers here, but yes, it that is.
I spoiled that movie ages ago when I saw it. It's like, holy crap! I have to tell you everything about this. Well, after it had been out for a while.
Mm-hmm. Everybody listening to the show probably seen it already. Surprisingly good, but just in a, well, it reminds me of another movie that, if you're talking zombies, I'm betting you will say, because whenever I think of one, I always think of the other. So I think of Maggie, and it takes me right to this other zombie movie that I just kind of fell into just by chance that turned out to be wonderful also.
Which one?
Oh, I thought you were going to jump. Well, I would say it would be, oh gosh, now I gotta get the title right. Is it The Girl with the Special Gifts?
Oh, The Girl with All the Gifts. British movie. Love it.
Gotcha, yes.
Great spin on the whole idea.
I just stumbled onto that movie, and it was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, for me, I would have included two other zombie movies, Fido and It Stains the Sands Red.
Now, I saw Fido. I thought Fido was okay.
It was funny.
I think it hit all the notes I expected it to, but there are sometimes I will watch a movie, and I think it especially with horror movies, if it's too late at night, you know, if I'm too tired, if I've watched too much stuff, or if I'm not in the right mood, that sometimes, you know, if I don't watch it again, and sometimes I do need to see something a second or a third time, because I had a lot of people tell me, oh, you're going to love Fido, but I don't know. It didn't strike me right, but I've only seen it once, and that was a while back. So it may be time for me to give it another view.
Well, as long as you know it's meant to be satire.
Yes.
And it was like, I understood that going in. It's like, I laughed my butt off the entire time. And then when I rewatched it again roughly a couple months ago, it was like, that is even funnier.
Yeah, I probably just need to give it another go. Yeah, and I didn't think it was bad. It didn't strike me as, you know, it just didn't, I didn't do a lot of laughing. Not that I thought stuff was dumb or I was missing stuff, but it might have been, again, and that happens with me every once in a while. I'm watching something, you know, I started way too late, which I've gotten better at. It's like, oh, dude, it's 10 till 2. Do I really want to start this?
Yeah, like, I try to not
maybe
do that.
I shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I have access to thousands, literally thousands of movies. I mean, my collection, I have about 2,000 movies or so. And then all the streaming services, and it's like I got some connections with some other people as well. And it's like, tonight I feel like watching a horror movie. Crap. I got about 500 that I haven't watched yet. Which one? Which one sounded good? This is why I liked It Stains the Sands Red. The name sold me, just the name. It's like, I'm going to watch that one. Okay.
As you say, the title's sweet.
Have you seen it or heard of it?
I have not.
Okay, so basic premise. One woman trying to survive from one zombie in the sands of desert by Nevada.
Wow. Okay, I'm writing that down. Hold on just
The premise is like, okay, I don't understand the premise, but it's okay. Watch it. And it's like, wow. This was really good. I like this. So for me, Maggie went to that.
Gotcha. Okay, I have made a note.
Excellent. But let's talk a little bit more about some of your other books. I see this line about The Dead Shall Inherit the Earth was featured in Xbox Magazine Zombies Collector's Edition as one of the 37 greatest zombie triumphs.
Yeah, I actually... It's funny. That may be my, you know, my crowning glory. which I need them to republish every 6 months. I have it on my bookshelf, and I looked at it today, and I started to pick it up, and I said, no, I don't need to pick it back up. But you know what? I was very fortunate that, you know, they say timing is everything. When my first book came out, there was nothing was going on. It was, you know, pretty quiet on the zombie front. And I'd sold quite a few books, but because I think it was just kind of different. And then it got quiet for a year or two. And then, let's see, what happened? I'm trying to think, what happened first? Was it Brian Keene's book came out? And then 28 days later, wait, I have to look. One came out, which kind of, you know, because my royalty checks had just shriveled to like nothing.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, boom, boom. Then, you know, suddenly it was 28 days later. And then, needless to say, once Walking Dead started, boom again. Which didn't happen when the graphic novels came out, of course, but more so when the TV show came out. But yeah, and it just ignited, you know, between Brian Keene's book, and I'm trying to think of the title, because there was a while, and a wonderful while, where if you went on Amazon and you put in, you know, zombie books, ours were the only two there.
Oh, really?
It was sweet, and that would have been back, 2002, 2003, maybe 2004, somewhere in there. But then again, you know, 28 days later, boom, everything went crazy. And then, you know, I'm starting to get checks. In fact, first check I got, I thought was a mistake. And I called the publisher and was like, I don't think this check is right.
It's too much.
Yeah, it's like this month, the month before, you know, was like nothing. The month after that was like $2.16. Then the next month was nothing. And then I got a check that I was like, man, I can do grocery and fill up my car. And oh my God.
Cool.
And then it was off and running. But yeah, we kind of got a jump. And
Jack is suggesting The Rising.
I can't remember Brian Keene's zombie book, his early book. And it just, you know, I drug along behind him. And we just sucked it up for a while, because for about a year and a half, the checks were just rolling in, and I was like, wow, I could actually hear the you know, like the cartoon registers ringing every month. It was sweet.
Jack in the chat room was suggesting it was The Rising.
Yes, there you go. It is.
He's smart like that. He's got a lot of books.
Yep. And I rode those piggybacks, boy. I tell you what, because I was like, well, yeah, whoa, and I was thinking, dang. So yeah, those were good times to be a, you know, to be a zombie guy. But it was funny because, you know, when I first did the book, I kind of needed it just to get it out of my system. I had first written it back when I was a teenager, and it was kind of my, you know, kind of interpretation of kind of melding Dawn of the Dead with like Star Trek. And, you know, my friends loved it, but you know, all writers' friends love their stuff.
Absolutely.
And, but I just needed to just try to get it out of the way. I knew it was kind of raw. I didn't really think it was really all that great. It had a lot of sex in it. So that, you know, my editor loved that. But,
well, yeah.
But I had no idea it was going to do what it ended up doing for me, which was just give me a little spot, like at the kids' table for a little while, but it was all about the timing, because, you know, 5 years later there's a gazillion zombie things, and you know, it had kind of, you know, it was just one of you know, a whole mess of things, and you know, but I can't even say it was fun to write, because at the time, you know, again, I was really just trying to kind of purge and get that story out of my head and out of the way so I could kind of move forward. And you know, the first, I think I still have the first version of it that a friend of mine typed up for me, that was, I don't know, 60 something pages, And there was one sex scene in it, which was like two sentences long. Because when I wrote the first, you know, the first draft of it, I was still a virgin. So I really had no idea. I mean, you can watch as many movies as you want, but you don't know what
it's not the same.
Yeah, it is not the same. And but obviously from that time to the time I got it published, you know, I had sex at least once. And so then I just kept, you know, changing the sheets on that and have the, you
Excellent.
Know, yeah, have the moon rise and the, you know, the surf come in and crash against the shore, and that was it.
So color, you added color to the story.
A little.
Yeah. Some just effects.
Just a little, just to help the people who needed it.
Yeah, some people, they need a little extra help. Some people don't. Stephen King likes to have a lot of extra. And other people don't.
Yes. See, I started to go there, but I don't think I'm going to really go there.
Let's not. It's all good. I mean, yeah. I'll admit it. I'm not a huge Stephen King fan. I like what he's done. I like some of his stuff. I absolutely do. But I don't read a lot of his work.
Yeah, and I can look back at my bookshelves now and say, oh, well, you know, it wouldn't look like that because I bought his first however many novels. Mm-hmm. But yes, once we got to, what was
too many.
The last thing? I'm trying to think. Gerald's Game was the last, well, actually, Gerald's Game was the first and the last of his novels that I actually bought, like, opening weekend when they came out in hardback. Because I had heard about it, and I thought, finally, he's going to write about sex. But it is the most unsexy book ever. And, I mean, and it's funny, because, you know, when they finally made a movie out of it, which I thought was way long overdue, the movie is not as sexy as it really should be, because it's really not about sex. But
right.
I just feel like, for instance, if Clive Barker writes that story,
uh-huh.
It's a whole different, we're talking about a whole different story.
Completely different library.
Yeah. But it just, I think there's just, and I think that's, after Gerald's Game, I think I only read one more of his books, which was Bag of Bones, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Now, I read everything up to Gerald's Game. Are all but maybe one thing, and most of them I still have on my shelves. And you know, a couple of his books are—I mean, dude, he's
prolific.
He's the man. I mean, I'm not throwing any shade his way.
Absolutely.
He's the Babe Ruth of horror.
Exactly.
So, you know, I mean, I got but for reading entertainment purposes. Once I got to an age where I realized that I was missing something from him that I was getting from other authors, because it's funny, I started reading him and then suddenly I was reading a bunch of other people, but there was a time where it was almost like a battle between, do I like Prince better or Michael Jackson? I'm reading Stephen King and then I'm reading Clive Barker. And it was just like, nah, I think I'll go with Clive Barker.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine rode out west when I moved out west a long time ago. And we literally read back and forth to each other stories from books of blood.
Yeah.
And we just read the stories out loud to each other while the other one drove. And it was, I've never done that before with anybody's
cool.
books. And that was the sealer there. I mean, I still love Stephen, but Clive opened the door to a whole bunch of other folks. And and made me realize even then that it's okay. You can combine, you know, horror and sex and just stir it up.
And you can be as far away from that as you like as well. I mean, I look at Stephen King as being, he created a foundation for literary concepts that built the rest of the genre. And everybody else
yes.
is built on top of that.
Yes. Yeah, you know, one of my favorite authors, Robert McCammon, I think there was a time
yep.
when there was like a joke going around where they'd say, well, you know, like Robert McCammon's new book was Stephen King's last book, that he was kind of following him. And,
yeah,
you know, and it's, you know, I have four or five of McCammon's books and it's kind of true, but they're so, they're much more actiony, pulpy kind of than, yeah, than Stephen King. But it just seemed like, yeah, you know, that's kind of was his thing, whether it was a vampire, epic vampire book, whether it was an end of the world thing, whether it was, you know, an alien invasion. He was kind of following along and was, you know, very successful at it. And I'm looking over at my bookcase and I'm seeing several of those books. But I used to tell myself, I'm like, even then I was like, well, if I could ever have a career like Robert McCammon, that's where my style lends itself more to than, you know, Stephen King is just, you know, but I don't, when I see the stories I want to tell, I just tell them in a different way than Stephen King. And, no, and nobody wants to be, you know, wants to try to
absolutely
duplicate someone's style or anything, but it just, I'm just much more, you know, much more primal, you know?
I can relate to that. I can completely dig onto that and say yes. Again, with the whole not everything for everyone, because otherwise everybody would be boring as crap.
Aye.
So I do see another comment here. Vince has created erotic fiction with Hyde and the upcoming graphic novella, The Presence.
Yes.
I'd like to know more. By the way, I also love the movie Starship Trooper, and they have that whole thing. Would you like to know more?
Oh, yeah. Starship Troopers is one of Dina Meyer's, dude. I mean, come on. That just, yeah. That's, yeah. That's strong business there.
Absolutely.
So, Hyde.
Hyde, yes.
It is, it's a novella. We actually threw some images. We just sprinkled, I don't know, maybe a half dozen in. To give it kind of a, you know, I grew up, and we talk about, you know, I grew up a comic book guy, so the idea of having pictures or illustrations, as I got farther along, I have more and more of that in my books, but we just wanted to have some images to kind of highlight some of the some of the elements of the story. I call it fun filth. It's a if I could have stretched it into more novel length, I would have. But the story, I mean, it just kind of told itself, and it just kind of landed into novella range. You've got it kind of has a kind of a Phantom of the Opera's kind of feel to it. But you have this mysterious stranger who kidnaps a woman, and then he basically kind of forces her to go on a journey of sexual enlightenment, which I'm trying to be careful how I kind of describe it, because, you know, in these days and times, you have to kind of be a little.
True.
And it's not that I'm not sensitive. I'm a mother's son, and I have a wife, and I have a daughter, and I have a granddaughter, and but the funny thing is, probably 90% of the feedback that I got back, especially the positive feedback I got back, were all from women, that they love the idea that you have this really strong female character who kind of just, you know, she goes on this journey, and it's enlightening, it's sexy, it's kind of crazy. I think of it as fun. But the response at the time was kind of crazy. People were really liking it, and the publisher did this kind of weird thing with the covers, where the cover doesn't really, this is going to sound weird, but the cover doesn't really feel like paper. It
right?
almost feels like skin. And I know that seems crazy, but you'd have to ask the publisher about it, because she would be able to tell you what, you know, what she did with the paper, what kind of special paper it is. But it, when I got my first copy, I was feeling it, and I was like, oh my God, this is so weird, but
it's
so awesome. But yeah, Hyde is, you know, people have asked me about, if nothing else, a lot of the comments were, you know, I didn't take it far enough. Because it was kind of, I was kind of tiptoeing over on that line of, you know, NC-17 to X, and I didn't want to write something pornographic, really.
Right.
Or if I was, that's what it's going to be, and we just have to wrap it up in plastic and put stickers on it. I wanted to make it so that it was still for a wider audience, but not for, you know, it's not made for teenage girls or anything. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's not.
So it's
that.
Not Twilight.
It's a long way from, way from that. But for adult women, the response over the years has been very, very good. Very, very overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, it seems to have some positive reviews on Goodreads.
Yeah, and there's a fictional place in the book that I don't know. If I had a dollar for every time someone like would whisper to me or would send me an email or ask me at a convention, is this a real place? And I'm like, no, it is not. But, you know, I've had people ask me, you know, am I going to write a story just about this place? Which I believe is called Appetite. And it's a very special kind of restaurant where people with interesting appetites go to get served what they want off the menu.
Oh, here I thought it was going to be all cannibal stuff.
Yeah, oh, no,
I'm
no.
sure there's you some, but not necessarily
cannibals.
All.
I do have, yeah, there. You know what? In the collection coming out, Death and Other Consequences, there is a cannibal story.
Excellent.
Because I was thinking for a minute, did I ever write a cannibal story? But I did. It's just, it's called Happy to Meet You. Meet You with a M-E-A-T. Happy to meet you.
I frequently use that as the concept that I'm usually saying. It's like, hey, nice to meet you. And that's what I'm thinking.
There it is.
Yeah.
So Hyde, yeah, it's, you know, like I said, definitely for adults. Now the presence, well, the cool thing about the presence is it took a long time to do. My goal at the time was to make I wanted to make a movie on the written page. So we took a couple of days and shot a story using black and white photography. And it's an erotic ghost story. Turned out awesome. But
cool.
It just took a long, long, long time, longer than I ever would have anticipated, putting it together, because literally we had thousands and thousands of shots to go through as we were trying to take individual shots to line it up into, you know, into at the time was going to be a graphic novel. Now the presence is going to be the anchor of the upcoming collection. So it's been a long time coming, but how the reaction to the presence goes, I think, is how far the collection is going to go. So I'm hoping when people pick up the collection and they flip through it and they flip through the back end of it and they see all the beautiful black and white photography of this erotic ghost story, that'll sell the collection.
So where can people find Death and Other Consequences?
Well, not to be found yet, because it's not quite out yet. It should.
I was going to say, I tried looking for it and I could find nothing.
Yep, no, it's not out yet. I would say it will probably, safely, it will be out probably by mid-July.
Cool.
You know, this is after not doing much the last couple of years. It's going to be a big year because that'll come out. My next novel will follow it out probably. And then we're trying to get a sequel to our kind of horror kids book out this fall in time, you know, do some fall things going into Halloween. So Death and Consequences hopefully will be out in the next, you know, four to six weeks, give or take, somewhere in there.
Cool. And who's it being published by?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know if I should
oh, okay.
say.
Is it a secret?
It seems like such a secret, and I know the publisher would hate the idea of me not actually, you know, saying
promoting
anything
them.
About, you know, the actual publisher, you know, what I'm saying. But no, Dark Recesses Press, and she does wonderful work.
Bailey does.
Uber talented. Miss Hunter,
uber
yes. talented.
We've had her on the show before.
Yeah, she is. She's just awesome. And you know, I've been very lucky. I've known her for a long time, and you know, it's been nice working with her the last few books of mine. But she's just, she knows writing. She has a good feel for the visuals. She has a good feel for storytelling. And she's not afraid to take chances, because my books are not always very, you know, A to B to C. Like, yep. I said, I blend a lot of genres, and, you know, I try to tell a good story, but I whip it up a little bit. So, I think some of that is the movie background, and some of it is just, you know, I don't want to do like a straight zombie movie if I can put it in a different kind of location, like the space thing. You know, and she's been good with that. So we've become, you know, I wouldn't say a partnership, but she, you know, she's wonderful to work for and work with. And like you see, you've seen the cover. I can't wait to see the collection, because again, it's going to be kind of an oversized, almost like a coffee table book, in order for like the images for the presents to be clearer and sharper for folks. And, you know, I can't wait, because she just makes beautiful books.
The picture that you shared, I'm telling you, that's a beautiful book. I love the look of it. It's got a lot of dead space presence. Just says, hey, this is not your normal book. And it kind of feels like a couple of different books that I have that are like really heavy.
Well, I can't wait to sometimes you kind of see things, and by the time you're getting to them, you've kind of moved on. Mm-hmm. But I've been waiting. A lot of people have been waiting for the presents. A lot of people, you know, I've just been waiting now these last couple of years. Things just got, you know, it's been weird, and things kind of got backed up creatively. So it's nice that finally, hey, we're getting back to some semblance of normal. And I can't wait to have that book in my hand, because I'm just really excited about people picking it up and leafing through it and getting to that, you know, getting to that anchor story and seeing the reaction for the presents.
Excellent. Well, this has been a very fast episode, because there's probably about another 150 things I could probably talk about, but we're actually at 10 o'clock, or an hour's passed, and that's pretty much wrapping up the end of the show. So how do people find you?
I am easy to find. I have an author page on Amazon, but I have a website, a lot of fun, literally just vincechurchill.com. It's got a little bit of everything there. You can pick up copies of books there. You can always leave me messages. If someone wants a signed copy of a book, I can take care of that. Typically we will have a list of upcoming events, as things get kind of set up, and that's slowly but surely coming, because it looks like this fall we're going to be busy. So we're starting to get things set up, but those are the two places easiest to find me. I'm also on Facebook. So if you want to try to friend me, and you're going to take a chance, because I will flip a coin to see if I want to friend you or not, if I do some deep, intense research. But yeah, if you're interested in looking at like books, looking at some of the things I've done and what's coming, definitely go to vincechurchill.com and or to Amazon.
Or Goodreads.
Yeah, you know what? I go to Goodreads in spurts. So, you know, it's always like, oh, yeah, I got everything done. Oh, no, wait, you know what? I gotta drop something at Goodreads. Oh, dang. Which only has like 8 billion people on it. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to you know, to teach a dog semi-new tricks.
I both do and do not understand that. And I'm going to leave that in the middle, because it is as obscure as I want to get with that.
Nice.
I only go to Goodreads to say, hey, who's got books? Oh, they got books. Oh, look at all these books. That's cool. And then I'm gone.
There it is.
Yeah. So we get it. We understand. So, Vince, thank you very much for coming on and talking about these wonderful things.
I appreciate the time. It's been a lot of fun, man. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to your folks.
Excellent. And I want to tell everybody in the chat room and everybody else on all the other streams that particularly connect in and whatever, whatever. And she keeps telling me I should work on my book as well. I actually have a few.
Yes,
we will
should.
Get there. I know. Time. But we will get there. Have fun. Good things. All that other stuff as I find where the other thing went to, because it's supposed to be over there when I do that sort of thing. Come back again every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to this same zombie channel, this same zombie chat room. Have fun, be well, and all that fun stuff as I play the outro.